I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You like that, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Who made it up?
Luis.
Did he do it on his own? Or did he nick it from someone?
No. He chose the music. He is Mr. Technical.
Wheels of Steel.
He is... you should see him on the Wheels of Steel.
Yeah, he's the Wheels of Steel.
Oh. Weddings.
Bar mitzvahs.
He's the man.
He's the man.
Honestly.
He really is. Birthday parties, kiddies, dudes.
Now that he's left us officially, he doesn't work for Be In Sports. Uh-huh. We can talk about him.
Yeah, we can. Yeah,
I think we should include him. Maybe a third mic wouldn't be a bad idea.
No. Have you ever heard him speak? Come on, no.
Our Portuguese man of war.
Yes,
an eclectic mix of bits and pieces this week. Our guest is Jan Algafjortov. If any, know Erling Haaland better than Jan.
No one does.
Well, his dad.
Apart from his family.
Yes. I sent, when Haaland signed for Manchester City, I'll get this out of the way nice and early. I sent Jan a message saying, well, now we'll see. This is his real test. Mm-hmm. Basing my judgment on the fact that, and here's something you and I disagree on, Sancho had failed at Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't say he hadn't failed. No. I said there's better to come from him.
Well, that's where we perhaps disagree then. I'm not sure. I think that capacity. So I said this is his first real test. Mm-hmm. Up until now, he's been scoring goals that in places you'd expect him to get them.
Well, not the amount.
Jan sent me that text back the other day when I called him and said, would you come and talk to us about him? And he said, yeah. He said, I'm keeping this one in my safe, which was my original text.
I told you at the time, I'd never been more convinced of a guy making it and being a success. Never, from what I'd seen. I just thought all the attributes.
But we hadn't really seen, had we? That was the problem.
But it's what I had seen that convinced me. I've seen players.
We saw Jadon Sancho. In Germany.
But I would never have said.
And he was magnificent.
I would never have said about Sancho, about others, that they are going to be, I guarantee you, he'll be successful. I knew Haaland would be.
Grealish.
Well, it's not easy sometimes. It isn't. And there's been numerous prior to that.
It's not easy sometimes.
Well, it's not. Look, how many?
Sorry, Haaland's coming to a win. The other night when we were on air, you said to me, if he'd gone to Manchester United, it would have been different. And I said, why? He's coming to a team that's got everything. So the same team that Grealish joined.
Yeah, agreed. Grealish has been hugely disappointing. Hugely disappointing. But look, Pogba, was he a success?
When you come off...
Was Pogba a success?
Hopeless.
Well, there you go.
But when
World Cup winner.
When you come off and the other two in the front line have got hat-tricks and you haven't...
Yeah, I know.
You must be saying to yourself, hang on a minute.
Nobody knows more than Jack Grealish. He's been disappointing since he went there. No one.
Crystal Palace chairman Steve Parish, and here's something else we disagreed about.
What was that?
Was an advocate of Brexit. We've got the biggest league in the world, he said, the most attractive league in the world, a massive revenue generator for Britain, an important brand for Britain. Uh-huh. So the point about this is we can now do what we want. We can allow what we want. No, you can't. Thomas Tuchel, as I mentioned last week, is on a 90-day stay of execution. 62% of 1.9 billion spent on transfers by the Premier League last summer went out of the English game.
Well, that's always been the case.
But the clubs now believe that they are being unfairly taxed by the government. It's what they're describing as an additional tax imposed by the government and football association, with revenue leaking abroad because they can't get their hands on what they want to. They can't get visas and they can't get work permits for tiers two and three.
Players.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, good.
So... Well, that is a view. That's what I thought you might see.
Well,
yes.
Good. So maybe some of our own young kids will get promoted a little bit earlier and given the chance a bit more air.
The Sun's supercomputer has predicted the Premier League table.
Oh, go on. Yeah. Oh, no, hold on. Already?
Yes.
Okay, City win it.
Well, I think we should go from bottom up.
Oh, goodness me. Bottom up.
Bottom
okay,
three.
Forest.
Yes.
Forest. Bournemouth.
Yes.
Cool, Blimey, Forest, Bournemouth. Who's the third one?
The third one, a very good judge, a very, very good judge, by the way, wrote a blog at the start of the season and predicted that
Ralph... Burnley.
No. They're
out. You said they might go last year. That's right.
No. I said, this guy will be out of work by November.
Oh, Southampton.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Forest, Bournemouth, Southampton, just by the skin of their teeth, surviving Leicester, Wolves, Fulham. So the top six.
Okay, let me just get the table up so I can have a look at it so I don't get mixed. Top six, obviously City win it, or do you want to go six?
No, is it six?
Sixth. Do you know, I might throw a wobbly in here and say Newcastle United.
No. Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. Manchester United.
They've got Newcastle finishing eighth behind Brighton.
Okay. Well, then it must be after that, and I'm not sure in what particular order, it'll be Chelsea,
yes.
Spurs,
yes.
Man City, Arsenal and Liverpool.
Well, no, hang on a minute. You've got to give me the order. I'm giving you the first two.
All right. Manchester United. Then after that, I would say it'll be Chelsea or Tottenham.
Chelsea,
Spurs.
Then Tottenham.
Then Liverpool.
Yes.
Then Arsenal.
Yes.
Then City.
Very good.
There you go.
Very, very good.
See, who needs a computer?
Well, the computer is the very same computer, I think, that generates those graphics on the world feed that we watch in this part of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Win percentage or whatever other nonsense it is that
they generate. Yeah, City have just gone one up against Nottingham Forest.
Win percentage, 98.
90%. Yeah. Oh, well done, computer.
Yeah, we thought that. Everton eager to make the Cody deal permanent. Well, that comes as no surprise
to
anybody.
He's been terrific, hasn't he?
Absolutely sensational. Really good business. Yeah. Really,
and
really good business.
Do you know what I'm even more pleased about? Because I thought that Frank had nailed his colours to the mast, and I wasn't 100% happy about it. And that by signing Conor Cody, he had to play a back three. Everyone told me Conor Cody can't play in a four. He's not quick enough. He's not mobile enough. He'll get caught out. That's the school of thought that followed Conor Cody around his career. That's why at Wolves he played in a three pretty much every game he played for them. And then when he came to Everton, he started in a three. Frank's changed it, and I'm so pleased he has. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Everton's results have got better, and they haven't conceded goals. They're one of the best defences in the league.
The best, I think, at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good to be... And I think it was a great decision, and it's just showed that Conor Cody can... quite easily playing any back four.
What did I tell you about Tottenham? Wheels are off. Antonio Conte this week insisting that he needs more money in the transfer market, despite spending 170 million last summer. Otherwise, what we see is what we're going to continue to get. Goals at the age of 22. Lionel Messi, how many? Quick.
22, 50.
Very good again. 45.
Oh.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, probably a bit more.
Give me
65.
Give me the same number, 50. Erling Haaland.
Oh, well, that's massive. 173.
There
you go. Do you know what I tried to do
ridiculous.
The other day? I read that, to be fair. I'm cheating a bit. I saw that. And I thought to myself, how many goals? Because I started early. And a lot of people say you have your best years. I think Arsene Wenger was talking to us the other week. Last week, I think it was Richard, and we were talking about players. And he says, amazing goal scorers, he said.
If I had something heavy now, I'd have dropped it on the floor.
No, but what?
Another name.
No, but he just talked to us. He likes his Arsene.
He does.
Yes,
he does.
He's one of the few.
But and we've influenced him in many different directions.
You know what I thought was interesting, because he is fascinating, Arsene, to listen to, was when we were talking about Haaland and that, and he says, yeah, goal scorers, he said, they normally have the best years in their early to mid-20s. He said, there are exceptions. Let's say Drogba, I suppose, was a very good exception who matured a lot later in his footballing life.
Didn't start until late, did he?
Exactly. So, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I started at 17, and I thought, I wonder how many, how close I got
did
to.
Did you check?
I couldn't find that. But I know that I'd got, that's total goals,
I looked,
or just league goals?
Yeah, no, that's total. I looked.
I would say I would have said... I'd have been up about 70, 75.
No, 23.
Yeah, knickers, 23. That was my first season at Dundee United. 23.
Declan Rice fears over an obscene slog, he describes it as, to include last season's summer's games, now the World Cup on the horizon. He said there were so many games last season, so many now leading up to the World Cup. I need to pace myself, not get injured or break down. We'll get back to that. We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
This was a great story. Inevitably headlined, What a Ball's Up. I got a box of top secret Premier League footballs sent to me by accident. This is a Brentford fan who'd ordered from, let's not name them, an international carrier, goods. He ended up getting his name and address plastered onto a box of four boxes of test balls for next season. That were supposed to be sent to Brentford's training ground. And instead of that, they went to his home in Hounslow, near West London. Nike bosses apparently were frantic after they went missing. These are top secret until next season, a Nike source said. Losing 12 was a big concern.
Not top secret anymore.
No, they're not, actually. They're very colourful.
Not anymore.
They're very colourful, orange. And yeah, these are the balls, of course, that, that teams get sent. Mm-hmm. A season
to train
in
with.
Advance to train with and get used to. Yeah, yeah. Bayern Munich admitted briefly they discussed taking Cristiano Ronaldo, but it was only a brief conversation. Sir Alex Ferguson's iconic squeaky bum time phrase and Jose Mourinho's parking the bus have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary as it updates 15 football-related terms, including gegenpressing, rosehead. Yeah. Gegenpressing is often said to have been introduced and favoured by several German managers, which, well, we now know Ralf Rangnick, Klopp, Thomas Tuchel. It's described as a style of play in which a team, upon losing possession, puts immediate and intensive pressure on the opposition, even deep in the opposition's half, in an attempt to regain the ball at the earliest opportunity. This has never been done before.
Why didn't we think of that?
Who?
Well, when we were playing back in the 70s.
Well, you should have done.
What was it called back then?
Trying to win the ball back high up the pitch.
Ah, that's what it was.
Rabona's gone in there. Cruyff Turner's gone in there. Panenka. Total football. Tiki-taka. False nine. And the Trequartista.
Ah, that's one. That's Christopher Sullivan's favourite.
The Trequartista.
That's a sweeper or somebody like that.
He's the one that sort of... a tactical term for an attacking player who operates in the space between the midfielders and the strikers, whose primary role is to create opportunities.
The Trequartista. That's Christopher Sullivan.
It does make me laugh. What? The 10.
A 10?
Yeah.
Number 10. Is that not in it?
It is in it, yes.
And is an 8 in it?
No.
And six?
No, that's dull. No, these are fancy descriptions, aren't they? So there we are. That's all.
That's it. More to follow.
Speaking of Christopher Sullivan, guest on our podcast, previous podcast, will be with us on beIN Sports for the World Cup.
Excellent.
This podcast, independently produced, available on all good platforms.
All good.
Touching every corner of the globe, if round can
if
be.
If it was square. Yeah.
Yeah, very much.
All four corners.
I'm drifting this through today because the order in which these come, I've no idea. I just save them. Erling Haaland, I didn't know until I was looking around this week, last night, in fact, doing a little bit of research. He once scored 9 goals in one game.
A proper game? Or a kids game?
Yes, under-20s game. FIFA World Cup game. Under-20s World Cup. 9. 9, Andy.
It's not bad, is it?
Not bad.
He should have got 10. He missed a sitter that day as well.
Well, actually, if you can go on YouTube and have a look, he did.
Did he?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
9. That's ridiculous.
Pretty special, the boy.
Why would Wolves want to talk to Julen Lopetegui?
Because that's Wolves.
Just sacked.
Does he speak Spanish? Or Portuguese?
Portuguese.
Well, there you go. That's why.
But he's just lost his job. I mean, I know that, you can't judge always on just one failure. That's maybe too strong a word.
Mm-hmm.
He's got quite a CV.
He's got
one
a CV.
Way or the other,
he's,
but
he's got a great CV. Listen, that's Wolves. Wolves will seemingly, if you don't speak Portuguese or Spanish, then you can't be coach of Wolves, because 8 of the team that started last week were Portuguese.
Our old mate Brucey, just enough.
Is he still in?
Enough's enough, just.
Got beat again, didn't he?
Unless I hear different, he says, I'll crack on. I still get up in the morning, want to come to work. It burns inside of me, especially as it is at the minute. Well,
it ain't burning on the pitch, I'm afraid.
No, it may just be time. Maybe. May just be time. Maybe. Andy Dunn, shame if Cooper's the latest victim of Prem hire and fire madness. You know, what struck me about this was not so much that Cooper's under pressure, but all those that advocate an independent regulator, what would they have said about the prospective ownership of Nottingham Forest Football Club by the current owner, Evangelos Marianakis?
I've got a clue. What would they have said?
Well, when he came, he suggested that he had all the right
credentials.
Rich. Committed. Forest fan. Allegedly. The chaos that ensued last summer, 22 different signings, and Steve Cooper now, I think he's waiting for the sack. I think he wants out, and I think he knows he's going to Southampton. And I think that would be a really good appointment by Southampton. I really do. But what would they have made?
So you've sacked Hasenhüttl in?
Oh, he's gone. I said at the start of the season, he won't make November.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. But Marianakis, those that say, you know, we need an independent regulator to make decisions about who owns our football clubs.
Explain to me.
What would they have said about Marianakis?
Explain to me then, because I don't know about this. I haven't paid much attention to independent regulator. Kind of dull and boring, and I don't get involved in it. But I know you take it all in, because that's a journalist you are.
Well,
what I'm saying to you is, tell me what an independent regulator, if he was in situ right now, would have done with that man.
Well, I honestly don't know.
Oh, okay.
Because as you look back,
am I supposed to believe that independent regulators would sift out the wheat from the chaff?
That's the idea. Yeah. I mean, I said when they started interfering in what was going on at Chelsea, that really they should butt out. Government should be nowhere near sport in general.
Okay.
Football in particular, because this is a classic example for me as to, you know, they would have nodded the deal through.
Right. What would that have done with Newcastle? What would that have done with Newcastle?
Well, an independent regulator would have had to have come to the conclusion that it probably wasn't a deal that should have been done.
Okay.
That deal was done, as we now know, because David Connors told us with a series of articles in The Guardian.
Guardian.
That deal was done as a result of government pressure, which they've denied from day one.
Yeah.
But it was. So I don't know. If the regulator was answerable to government, maybe it would have still happened. But it's the same with Mel Morris at Derby, who, when he took over, was the right man.
Yeah.
He subsequently was proven to be the wrong man. Look where they are. This is where Forest are heading, in my view.
Now they are. Quickly.
Yeah. I said the sequence of events would be Cooper gets fired, they get relegated, they go straight through the Championship, they're in administration halfway through next season, and they're battling back from League One the year after. So, you know, independent regulator.
No.
Really?
Not for you?
No.
Okay.
It's nonsense, Andy. Absolute nonsense. Kyle Walker, big trouble for England. Big trouble.
Why?
Having undergone the operation yesterday. Why? Because he is central to their three at the back.
Well, yeah.
Central to three at the back. Can you have central to three at the back? I don't know.
Well, he's right central or three at the back.
Normally, I'm told, the op that he's undergone is a 10 to 12 week recovery.
What is it?
England's first game is in 6.5 weeks.
He's not fit. He won't play.
He can't play. So what then do England do with Harry Maguire not selected for his club side?
Yeah. John Stones, in and out.
John Stones.
In and out.
In and out.
Well, haven't England got other centre-backs?
Well, who?
Connor Cody.
Yeah, okay.
Tarkovsky. Well, I'm just... Are the internationals or not? Have they played for England recently or not? Yes.
Yeah, just from another era. Brian Marwood's an England international.
No,
come on.
But they're playing now. They're playing in the Premier League, is what I'm saying. It's not great for England. I've said that to you for a long time. I think that's a real worry if I was an English fan. We've got a lot of sensational talents, you would be saying. At the top end of the pitch and in midfield, we're well served there, but... Look at the back.
Well, I don't know. Grealish is in and out.
You've got some talent.
I return to what I've said.
You've got some talent.
Okay, so who do you play left side at the top end?
Play Foden there if you want.
Foden. So where does Grealish get Grealish.
No, I'd play Grealish there, but if you're saying he's not playing well enough, I would play Grealish there. And then you've got Sterling on the other side.
I don't think England are blessed with enough good players.
You've got Foden who can play, instead of two sixes, for modern terminology for everybody, instead of two sixes, which is what they play, just play Rice. And then play Foden and another one with talent.
That.
Well, he should do that.
You play two sixes.
I know, but he should do that. He's, look at the group they're in. He should do that.
He'll play two sixes because he wants to feel his way into the tournament, I would have thought, with that first game against Iran. So ahead of that, Sterling's not in blistering form.
No, he's not. No, I know. But
he can still fall over as well as anybody else.
That's irrelevant.
And that's something that Jack Grealish has got in his locker. I mean, if you're looking for a pen,
free kicks and pens, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I think you've got some talent at that end of the pitch. And if it clicks, it can click really well. But I don't know where you go at the back. Full-back positions, you're good. Right? Wing-back, full-back. Yeah, you are, I think.
Okay, who's the right-back? Who's the right wing-back?
Reece James would be my number one right now, and closely followed by Kyle Walker, closely followed by Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Either Walker's out, or England has got the same situation that they've had with Beckham and they've had with Rooney in different tournaments, where they say, we'll pick a player that might get fit.
If recovery is 12 weeks, he's not going to play.
10 to 12 weeks is usual.
Well, no, they can't.
Your first
game's in six.
Well, do you pick him and say, well, as we progress in the tournament, he'll be ready?
You're going to laugh at this, but I remember Scotland did that once.
Well, England have done it with Rooney. England did it with Beckham.
They took Gordon McQueen to one of the World Cups, and he had his leg in a plaster. And he went up the stairs of the plane with his crutches.
Yeah, they took him instead of you.
I think it was Ali McLeod, 78 it might have been, Argentina. And Ali McLeod says, we'll need Big Gordon for the later stages of the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, this is your conundrum.
Yeah. Well, what would you do? What would you want to do as a supporter?
I would always take a fit player.
Yeah.
I think the risk is too great. Yeah.
And what's his fitness going to be like? Well, I know he's a fit lad. We know that.
Alexander-Arnold, and you wouldn't put him in ahead of Reece James?
Not at the moment. Not at the moment. I think Reece James's overall game in the round is better. I think he's a better defender than Alexander.
Who's your left fullback?
You've got Chilwell.
Shaw's not playing.
Got Shaw.
Chilwell's not playing.
You've got who's the other one? Chilwell, Shaw.
These are players that aren't good enough.
I know what you mean. They're not getting in their own teams. Chilwell's played. He played against Milan, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's in. He'll stay in Chelsea, I think. He'll stay in the Chelsea side. So you're all right there. I think you're all right there. The wide areas. It's just centre backs. I look around and I see. I think he plays three because he doesn't trust two. I might be wrong.
Well, that's put that another way then. He thinks the two he's got are shit.
No, they're not good enough to play together, whoever it is, as a two. And that's why I think he plays three. I can't think of another. Well, I can think of a few reasons, but I can't think of one where, if I'm England and I've got all this talent, why am I so worried about the back? These two centre-backs should be able to cope with Iran, USA and Wales, with the greatest respect to the three nations I mentioned. England as a nation and as players should be able to cope with two at the back playing against those teams. I'm sorry, they should, and play another forward-thinking player. But I don't know. I mean, it looks like he's always wanted a three. I don't know who his three are going to be. I have no clue.
Jack Leslie should have played for England in 1925. Wasn't picked because of his colour. Jack Leslie was the first black player to be called up by England. Subsequently, as I say, didn't start and in fact was sort of pushed back down the pecking order in those days because of his colour. Well, he's going to get now a cap. The family are going to get posthumously cap, which is nice and quite right as well. It's an unprecedented decision by the FA to award the cap in this manner. It's been taken to right an historical wrong, says Debbie Hewitt, the FA chairwoman. But it got me to thinking that if they're prepared to do that, and quite right, I have no problem with that at all, might they knight Bobby Moore?
Well, what have I said to you for as long as I can remember, as long as I've known you? It's ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous. With the greatest respect to Sir Geoff Hurst and Sir Bobby Charlton and all, Sir Alf Ramsey, yes, they all deserve their knighthood. But come on, if you're England captain, the only person ever to lift the World Cup for your country in history, can't be knighted, what the hell are they doing? What the hell are they doing?
No idea.
Yes, he should be knighted posthumously, 100%. And you did well, because I know you were part of the group that got his statue put up at Wembley.
Yeah.
So you might be as well just starting again and saying, listen, this is ridiculous. Bobby Moore needs to be, that name needs to be, have a sir in front of it, without a shadow of a doubt. And I speak as a Scot.
Well, I can't argue with anything you've said. I still see him now, Andy, coming out of England, white shirt, chest out, ball under his arm, you know, and you look at Bobby Moore. I said to you before, I went to watch, when I was watching Coventry as a young lad, playing West Ham, and it just frustrated the life out of me. I thought, stop putting the ball on his head, you know, try and find a different way around. And of course, all these years later, I realised he just happened to be in the right place. at the right time for 90 minutes. He was magnificent.
He was.
And as a bloke, he was magnificent.
Great bloke. I mean, I spoke to him quite a lot in the early days of Sky. You and I were there in the boot room. I had Bobby, he came in the boot room for two or three shows, I remember it.
I remember running into Resistance with the statue, and the problem that...
What was the Resistance?
The biggest problem was that the current suits see themselves as important or more so and want the space that they're going to give up for a statue like one of Bob at Wembley for themselves.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I mean, get off. But Bob stands alone.
Oh, he does.
Absolute icon.
My vision of him that I remember is that lovely moment where he went up to collect the trophy and he realises the Queen's waiting with her white gloves on. And he very quickly wipes his hands on the cloth that was just before her so that he wasn't shaking Her Majesty's hand with a wet, sweaty palm. So
let's not forget, that was the hat trick, because he'd been up 2 years before with the FA Cup. Oh. Cup Winners' Cup. World Cup.
Was that at Wembley?
Brilliant.
All at Wembley.
Fantastic.
Wow.
Fantastic. Erling Haaland's secret, just before we talk to Jan Fjørtoft, Erling Haaland's secret, the Times report today, Tony Turnbull, Times food editor. Wow.
he digresses.
His dad's lasagna.
Ah, right.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
What it is?
That's what it is. The secret has been revealed of his prowess in front of goal, speed, guile, muscularity, but mainly his father's lasagna is the reason for this. I've had it before every home game now, and that's turned out fairly well for me, he said.
Well, you'd think lasagna would sit in your belly, wouldn't you?
Well, that's what I thought.
Running about with a big lasagna in your stomach.
There has to be something special to it, says Tony Turnbull, and he comes to the conclusion that, as any good Italian pasta maker would tell you...
Gluten-free?
No. Love.
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 Maybe it's plant-based.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking. Let's speak to Jan.
Do you like that?
I think it's a bit heavyweight. Yeah, it reminds me of a young Olga Fjørtoft ploughing through the centre of defences in a Swindon jersey. All
no subtlety. Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what I'm trying to say.
I remember him well.
Needed a runway for his second touch.
Oh, he's good. Good boy.
Now we've insulted you. Jan, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I love it. To start the day by being insulting is the best way of starting the day.
Of course it is. That means, Jan, the day can only get better.
Exactly.
Two things, Jan. One, I've already confessed to my loose... I'm not quite... Well, you'll have a description for it, I'm sure. Suggestion that Erling Haaland might struggle in the Premier League. That text you keep in your safe to haunt me with. And secondly, I can reveal for you today, we've just been discussing this.
Jan might know it.
I don't think he will.
Oh, ask him.
This is an exclusive. Mm-hmm. This is a Keys and Gray podcast.
I'll be amazed if he doesn't know it.
Courtesy of the Times and Tony Turnbull, the Times food editor.
Uh-huh.
The secret to the success, Jan, would appear to be his dad's lasagna. Did you know that?
Not only did I know it, my dear friends, that was first said by me in an interview with Alfie Holland on Sunday.
I told you you'd know it.
I spoke to Alfie last night, and he said, "Jan, you made me into a chef in England."
According to the article I'm reading, Erling has said, "I've had it before. This is lasagna.
How can you eat a lasagna before a game?
I've had it before every home game, and it's turned out fairly well for me. Lasagna, really?
That would just sit in your stomach for about 5 hours."
Well, first of all, I don't think Scots should talk about meals and different things.
Take it but, back. I mentioned two words, Gordon Ramsay. There we go.
Gordon Ramsay is now second in the chart of chefs in the UK. But he said that. And then I also asked him, what is Erling doing when you were cooking for him? And he said he's lying on a sofa. So that is a typical father-son relationship.
Well, it would have to be a big sofa, wouldn't it?
A long one.
I've never seen, honestly, Jan, I have never seen anything like it. The baton has been passed on. No one's talking about Ronaldo or Messi.
No.
Even Mbappe is in his shadow. Yeah. I mean, this kid is phenomenal. So I hold my hands up. You were right. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, and we were talking the other day, me, Ruud Gullit was in, wasn't he? And who else was there? Marcel Desailly and
Didier Domi
and Arsene Wenger. And we were asking the guys, go on then, tell me, have you ever seen something like that? I tried to think of players that I've seen, yeah, and I think, yeah, he's so-and-so, he's a bit like that. I've never, ever, I can't think of a past player that he reminds me of. He just seems to be unique. Would that be fair?
Yeah, unique in the terms of how he plays, how he loves his game, how a humble guy he is, and how he adjusts very quickly. Because a lot of people now saying, yeah, he's adjusting so quick to the Premiership. But if you follow his path, he started in Salzburg when he came into the Champions League, scored 3 goals against Genk in his first Champions League game.
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course he did. And then he was like 12. And then he went to Dortmund. First game in Dortmund was against Augsburg away from home. And I remember I was there. Yeah, hat trick. And he came on in the 60th minute. So the head of communication of Dortmund, you know how it was like. They said, now you won't speak to him because he's not starting and blah, blah, blah. After the first goal, I sent him a text and say, is it okay now? And he said, I will see. And then he scored 2. And I said, I guess I will get him now. And the third, as a substitute, then the head of communication of Dortmund came flying in the air and hugged me. So that sums up the career of Erling Haaland. So the way he's adjusting to English football, that is how he's doing things. And I think that they will be honest about it, that it is goes quicker than they think in every club. Mm. So it takes next step in every club. But I think that is so remarkable about this kid. He's 22 and he's still adding to his game. Now he scores with a header, he scores with his right foot, and it seems that he loves football. And I think that is a great, great way of saying that.
Has he in any way surprised, well, I'll ask you, and his father, and how quickly he has got to where he is in life? I mean, I guess you had confidence, but has he surprised you, Jan, that he's gotten there at 22 years of age?
It got to surprise anyone, I think, because he looks more like a superhero in a cartoon, how his career is going. And I think that what is interesting to see, if we've I've had the pleasure or the intense traveling to follow him very closely the last 2 years. And what you've seen is that he's added quality to his game as it goes. Like after 5 games, his build-up play is better now. Wow, his heading is better now. And if you see him, how he's working in a daily routine, this is a guy who 24/7 tried to develop, to do better in all kind of things, of drinking, sleeping, glasses for his balance, whatever. He does everything to improve.
I was researching before we spoke, Jan. I was looking around on YouTube yesterday and came across some pictures of him as a 13-year-old smashing goals in left, right, and centre. And it is just you couldn't mistake him even then. And then this leapt out at me. Erling Haaland once showed a killer instinct by smashing 9 goals in one game. This wasn't a friendly. This is an under-20s World Cup game. For 9. It's unbelievable.
9 goals, yeah. Yeah, and everybody thought I was a thing that there's been some betting involved with for the opposition. But then we had a look at the goals, and they were all typical Erling Haaland goals.
They were,
and yeah, and as you were saying, he's always taking new steps. But mind you, he has also changed. His body has changed. He came to Dortmund the first year. I think he gained 8 kilo muscles. 8 kilo. And that is going from being a Champions League player, scoring, I think, 10 goals six, seven goals for Salzburg before he came there. And then he got that muscle. He grew as a young kid doing. He's a late bloomer somehow as well. And I think that is frightening. Because
please tell me he stopped growing.
Yeah, I think he stopped growing, but I think that was the major mistake. A lot of I always say lazy pundits, and I get hammered for that. But lazy pundits, when they saw Erling Haaland, they were only thinking that this was a kind of Zlatan kind of guy. This was just a counter attacker and blah 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 blah. But the thing is, he was that too. But what I think is amazing, seeing it from the striker union, is that this guy, he got so many things to his game. Mm. Because yes, it's true, when you play for Manchester City, there's not a lot of counter attacks.
No.
But this is his movements in the box, who is so sensational. And I always, you saw that karate goal against Dortmund, a fantastic goal. But still, the little movement he did just ahead of it, that made him free to make that karate goal.
But you gave me a word very early, Jan, in the season. You talked about timing. That I think he has in abundance. And it's almost, I think, of all the attributes he has, the greatest gift of them all. I don't know if you can teach that. It just seems so natural.
Absolutely. And, of course, being the son of a former teammate, we have followed him and we saw him and we saw some clips. The first time I actually saw him, I think, live, was in that Salzburg game away at Liverpool, and he came on as a substitute. And after the game, I couldn't believe, I was so fascinated by his runs. He scored one goal against Van Dijk, at that time was the best defender in the world. But he could have scored four. And he was on for 20 minutes if he had players around him who saw his runs. And mind you, this is a guy, I've said it so many times, but he never goes in offside. No. And the thing is with his timing is that...
Yeah,
and his body language, he kind of, he creates the space first, and then through his body language, through his run, he kind of tell a De Bruyne, tell a Mahrez, tell a Silva, this is where I want the ball. So, of course, when you play with De Bruyne has shown that he can find any striker. But in this mixture of that he creates that space for himself, and then he just times his run, I would say in that department is second to none.
Alf, you say former teammate, so yeah, good mate, been in your life a long time. But what were the last 2 years like? But particularly because you were making this documentary with Erling.
Yes, I think that when people saw this documentary that we published in the beginning of September, I think they were amazed. And very underestimated the job Alfie Haaland has done for the Team Haaland, as I love to call it, the Team Haaland, because this is systematic how they work to improve him. I mean, that a lot of people do. And then when you come up to choosing the right clubs, this was a guy who went to Molde, from Brune to Molde. That was not like a breaking news, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was there, former striker, former teammate of Alfie as well. Molde had a good development department. Okay, so then they scored so many goals in Norway, they had to find a new working place, so to say. They had fantastic offers from the Bundesliga. Juventus was in for a lot of money involved, but they went to Salzburg because they had a record developing players. And then when he had a breakthrough in the Champions League, and they thought this is the only way he needs to move again, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would down it, a then Manchester United manager. A lot of English club wanted him. Big clubs in Germany. I'm not saying Dortmund is not a big club, but it's also a club that had an image of making good players into great players, and then they move on, as also Erling did. But the systematic thing they work, I've never seen that, and that surprised me as well. This way they have a table where they analyze every club and give the different things in different clubs points. So I was saying that the stadium atmosphere, that is something. Vacancy, like in Formula One, you need a free driver. You need a place for the driver. Like that would, of course, be minus for Real Madrid, who had Benzema and Mbappé coming. So Manchester City had a clear number nine. Bayern Munich had Lewandowski at that time, and so on and so on. So they do this so systematic. That is, I think that is a big, big credit to Alfie Holland and how he kind of take people on the departments that he knows that he need more knowledge. Impressive.
Was it always City?
No, absolutely not. If you will, you'll probably one time get the privilege to see this documentary. It was three or four clubs within, and the first time he kind of revealed that was in back in February. I think we were sitting down with him. And at that time, Bayern was very, very intense looking to get him. Real Madrid, of course. Manchester City. So there
United?
Was
United? Were United thought, ever contenders?
I will not say that they were not, because that I don't know. But he never said that. Is that a diplomatic answer?
Very diplomatic.
I'm waiting to see the documentary. I can't.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see it.
When does the rest of the world get to see it?
You like it.
When's it out for us?
When they buy it.
I just wonder, if you talk about being meticulous in the planning for his future and what have you, would it have made any difference in your mind? I know it's hypothetical now, but let's say Lewandowski had gone 12 months before. Would that have made Bayern Munich a bigger threat to City? If Lewandowski's gone.
I think it would, but I think that at this stage of his career, I think that you can understand it's also important for them to win titles.
Yes.
You will do that in Manchester City, you will do that in Bayern Munich, you will do that in Real Madrid. But it's very theoretical. And if you know, Team Haaland is always saying that they want to have new adventure, experience new league. So I think that that was against Bayern because he's already did it in the Bundesliga and Premiership. And when it then ended up being Manchester City, of course, there's a fantastic bonus that his dad is playing there.
Yeah.
And he was a fan as a kid. But still, that was not the main thing on their table.
He was born in England, wasn't he?
No. Yeah, but you won't get him.
No, you're not having him. No, you're not having him.
Well, the follow-up... was it ever a consideration? Surely it was. He wants to play international football at the highest level. Yeah, and I mean, Team Haaland should have been whispering in his ear very early, shouldn't they?
That you have to ask Team Haaland. I don't know.
That's another diplomatic answer. Yeah.
And I guess we shouldn't be selling him already. Guardiola's already taking these questions. Real Madrid, there's no release clause, he said. But I guess at some point he'll be able to choose wherever he wants to play his football again.
Well, he's 22, so he can.
He's got to sample Spain at some point, haven't you?
You'd think so. Jan?
They've been very clever all their career. No, he's played in Norway, he played in Austria, he's played in Germany, and as they say in the documentary, there are still some countries left that they want to play football in. But I think it's a bit too early after being 3 minutes in English football.
Exactly.
You'll talk about
selling
next
them again.
I'm just responding to the stories that there are about. But even you, Jan, who know him intimately as well as his dad, nearly. Even you have to be surprised by the way he started. Three hat-tricks in three consecutive home games. They only took him off the other night to save another match ball. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it comes to that thing that I was at the North London Derby. I was at the Manchester Derby. I was at both. Okay, I know I'm turning into a boring guest. But I was at the Manchester Derby. And when he starts scoring, it's just like, yeah, of course he does.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He would probably do three. And that is the thing about it. But I think that, we can say that I had no doubt that he would do well in English football. I had no doubt that he would do fantastic in English football. But of course, there is no one who can thought that he would make three hat-tricks. There is no one thinking that it will be an instant hit. And I know people read history backwards, and they will say, but of course it would. Well, De Bruyne and Silva, they will all follow. But what is this? And I like to say that, because sometimes we're talking about this machine, so-called. But the thing is, what impressed me most is that he still is a 22-year-old.
Correct.
And when it comes to Manchester City,
I don't think he is.
And still,
he's older.
I don't think he
still
is.
26.
He must be 32.
Must be 26.
He can't be 22.
Got to be 28.
I mean, you look at the team sheet before they play now, and you're thinking to yourself, how many will he get? Not, will he score?
Mm-hmm.
I've never done that with a player before. Messi and Ronaldo, I've never thought that way.
Yeah.
It's just now two today, now, three.
But Alfie is 68 years of age. We know that he's an older man, Alfie. But it's true. But what I want to say is, what is so impressive about the mature way he's acting? Because, as you're saying, everybody expect him to score, and of course he will expect him to score as well. But he will kind of turn that energy into some things. Productive for him, you know, and it's quite interesting, because we've seen so many goal getters, the three of us, all over the years, and it's unbelievable if you see the enjoyment he's having also when his teammates scoring goals.
Yeah.
I will bet you that at the end of the season he will have one of the most assists of all players in the Premier League.
Incredible.
I can see that happening. Yeah. He had two in the Manchester derby.
I didn't forget them, Jan. I very much saw them.
I don't want anybody to misunderstand this question, because I'm not some kind of foot fetishist, but I have asked Jan previously what size his feet are, with a purpose, because I've always been of the opinion the smaller the feet, the more touch, the more control, the more... You know what I'm saying, the more dexterity. I'll guarantee you he's got feet about the size of 14. And even that is incredible, that he can caress a ball in the manner that he does with these skis on the end of his legs.
Yeah, but if he had small feet, he'd fall over, the size of them.
Well, yeah, that was Mick Ferguson's problem, the old Coventry centre forward, size 6.5
yeah,
feet.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. He needs size 12 feet.
I'll bet they're bigger. Jan, do we know yet?
I have no idea.
For goodness sake.
Wrong guest.
No, it's not as though I didn't give you warning. Jan, thank you. And please, I mean...
By the way,
not sure what else there is to say about the lad.
How is he going to cope when he doesn't score in the game?
Well, he's not going to have to, is he?
How is he going to cope? What? When he goes through that drought...
Well,
of one game without a goal.
I know, because I had some times when I didn't score. As Jimmy Greaves said, I was the worst 30 minutes of my life. But it's like Erling Haaland. You just feel that this guy will do okay, because I think that when he had a goal drought in Dortmund, that was a mixture of injuries and not scoring goals. So to make it even worse, when he doesn't score, there's something wrong with his body. Yeah. And the thing is, the basic with this kid, and I think that was a good thing about this documentary, that people saw that. I've seen it all along. This is a good lad. You would love him.
Mm. Yeah.
He's a good lad.
He comes
across his football. He has his humor. And this thing that he does in interviews, yes, no, yes, no. That is also kind of a mixture of being 22, but having a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
So he's like, they interviewed in Germany in German, and then it translated to English. But he understand every German word, so he always made jokes with the Germans on that. And when they asked him, and when he said, yeah, when you scored, you went to the yellow wall, and you did a sign to them. Did that mean anything? Yes. And I mean, that is bad journalism. Then you have to
do
another question.
Yes. What did it mean? Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. By the way, I've just been looking back through the records here. Swindon Town, Jan. No, it was 30 games, Jan, not 30 minutes.
30 games he went without a goal.
Drought, yeah.
Yeah, was it 30
games? I'm getting older. I can't remember. No, that couldn't have been Jan. To make the record straight, first half of the season, zero goals. And then second part of the season, only Letizia scored more than fucking five. Yeah. Sorry if I swear.
There you go.
Your memory's
blown. Well done, Jan. Nothing wrong with your memory.
We love the big man. Thanks, Jan.
Thanks, Jan. Top man. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, buddy.
Pleasure as always.
Bye. you did look at me strangely when I mentioned his feet. You know what I'm saying?
I know
about
what you're
that?
Saying. I mean, yeah.
Massive plates of meat.
He must have big feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got a huge body. Yeah.
You know, perhaps in the Oxford English Dictionary, which we were discussing earlier, perhaps the phrase "nice touch for a big man."
Why not? Nice touch for a big man should be in there. It should. Why is it not? Everybody's used that phrase down here. He's got a nice touch for a big man.
We are surprised. Yes. We are surprised when big men have a nice touch, aren't we?
Yeah, still. We always say that. That's always levelled at them, yes. Isn't it? But that was because back then there were fewer than them. Now it's standard. Mm. For a footballer, or a defender, even the midfield players, strikers, to be 6 foot plus.
Yeah.
Plus.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to drop another name. When I was stood beside John Terry the other day, right? JT, and I said to you, see the size of him. JT.
Yes.
When I commentated all those years, right, watching him from afar, doing the games, I never looked at John Terry and thought he was exceptionally tall.
No,
but
I agree.
He's 6 foot three.
That, it's not helped by the fact that although you've convinced yourself somehow that down the years you were 5 foot 11.
I was.
You've always
touching
been
six
5 feet,
foot I thought.
10 and a half. And of course with age, that's factoring
no, I'm
age.
No, I've not shrunk. I measured myself the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
really?
I'm 5 foot
oh,
11.
Of course you did.
5 foot
yeah.
11.
Yeah, of course you did. I do that all the time, measure myself.
I do.
Yeah.
I've got a mark on the wall. Oh, right. 1975, and it's there.
That's it. I hope you've enjoyed as the World Cup creeps ever closer.
Yeah. Racing. It's not creeping, it's racing.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stories being generated already about this tournament. But that's it from Keys and Gray. I repeat, this is an independent production courtesy of Luis.
Luis.
On all good platforms, and as Tim Lovejoy used to say, on a few bad ones as well.
Oh, absolutely.
So now you've found us, tell your mates where we are, and we'll join
correct.
You next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.